Welcome to the Deep Dive. If you're tracking the world of decentralized technology, you know the pace of innovation is, well, it's not just rapid. It can be completely overwhelming.
Dizzying is the word I'd use.
Exactly. So our mission today is really laser-focused. We are cutting through all that technical noise to give you a comprehensive, balanced investment analysis on Ethereum, the world's second-largest crypto, ETH.
And I think it's essential to start by establishing what Ethereum actually is right now. Mm-hmm. We often hear Bitcoin described as digital gold, you know, a store of value.
Right.
Ethereum is something fundamentally different. Think of it more as the world computer. It's the foundational layer where almost all serious decentralized finance, asset tokenization, all of that is being built.
And its pull on the institutional world is, well, it's undeniable now. We're not just talking about speculative retail interest anymore. This is core global finance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at the source material, the most surprising statistic for me was this. Ethereum currently hosts nearly 80% of all tokenized U.S. Treasury products.
That's a huge number. That's real-world serious weight.
It is. And that statistic is basically the mission statement for this deep dive, isn't it? We need to understand why ETH, despite its age and, let's be honest, some of its complexities, remains the platform of choice for the world's biggest players.
Exactly. So the goal for you, the listener, is to explore the reasons for this dominance. We'll look at the big benefits, its ecosystem, staking, its scaling success, but we also have to balance that against the critical risks.
And those risks are very real. We're talking about intense competition, the challenge of network fragmentation, and some looming regulatory questions that could really impact its value in late 2025.
Because while the network is absolutely dominant, it is also navigating one of the most complex scaling transitions in tech history. And that transition, ironically, is creating new vulnerabilities that competitors are jumping on.
So where do we start? The trust factor. Why do the biggest names in finance keep choosing Ethereum?
That's the perfect place to start.
Okay, so let's unpack that institutional confidence. It all starts with the ecosystem, but it's not just the sheer volume of activity, it's the quality of that activity. Ethereum is the established, trusted settlement layer for the global on-chain financial system.
And that phrase, settlement layer, carries immense weight for an institution. I mean, think about it this way. In traditional finance, that's the final undisputed ledger. It's where a transaction is recorded as complete, irreversible.
The final source of truth.
Precisely. On-chain, Ethereum provides that certainty for thousands of apps and billions of dollars in stablecoins.
So for a JP Morgan or a Visa, when they use Ethereum, they're not just, you know, running a transaction, they're plugging into a system that has proven its security and its robustness for years.
Right. That 80% figure for tokenized treasuries is the physical proof of that trust. The implication here for the listener is that buying ETH isn't just a bet on a token. It's like buying a stake in the infrastructure that global finance is actually starting to rely on.
And that creates a powerful network effect.
A very powerful one. The more value that's locked in, the more secure it becomes, which in turn makes it harder for any competitor to catch up. It's a sort of moat.
And of course, nothing screams institutional acceptance louder than regulatory approval. The approval and then the explosion in growth of the spot Ethereum ETFs in 2024 and 2025, that was a critical inflection point.
Oh, absolutely. It cemented ETH as a legitimate staple. It just completely removed that niche speculation label.
And now we see major banks not just speculating, but actively using it. JP Morgan with tokenized funds, Visa with payment settlements. This isn't just short-term interest.
No, this signals deep corporate confidence in Ethereum's long-term security.
But wait, let me just pause and challenge that a little bit. We're going to get into the competition later, but we know blockchains like Solana are they're demonstrably faster and cheaper right out of the box.
They are.
So why are these huge banks who demand efficiency choosing the older, slower, and historically more expensive network? Is it just inertia or is there something more fundamental?
That is a crucial question. And the answer really is security budget and maturity. Newer chains can boast about raw speed, but they just haven't endured the public testing.
The battle testing.
Exactly. The billions of dollars of deployed capital, the sheer volume of attacks that Ethereum has successfully fought off. For institutions, predictability and security trump almost everything else.
So they're essentially paying a premium for certainty.
They are. A premium for the certainty that their multi-million dollar transaction isn't going to just disappear. You simply cannot replicate that decade of trust overnight, no matter how good your white paper is.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's pivot now from market dominance to the unique economics of the ETH token itself. We're getting into passive income and this idea of manufactured scarcity.
Right. This is maybe the biggest differentiator from Bitcoin. Since the merge, ETH holders can now stake their coins. That just means locking them up to help secure the network.
And in exchange for that, they get rewards. They generate passive income.
Exactly. And as of late 2025, that income stream is proving incredibly attractive. Staking yields are hovering around 4.8% annually.
Which, when you combine it with the potential for the asset's price to go up, creates a really powerful incentive for long-term buy-and-hold investors. It changes the whole supply dynamic.
It really does. It removes a huge amount of liquid supply from the market, which then gets compounded by the other key economic pillar, scarcity, driven by EIP 1559.
Okay, let's break that down for anyone who hasn't been tracking the technical proposals. What is EIP 1559, and how does it make ETH scarce?
It's a really elegant mechanism, actually. It changes how transaction fees or gas are handled. Before 1559, all the fees went to the miners or validators.
And now
a portion of every single transaction fee is permanently burned.
Meaning destroyed. Gone forever.
Gone forever. Removed from the supply.
So if the network is really busy, you know, millions of tokens being swapped, banks settling transactions, the amount of ETH being destroyed can actually be more than the amount being created as staking rewards.
Precisely. During those peak periods of activity, the asset becomes theoretically deflationary.
So you've got an asset that pays you a yield through staking, and it's also being destroyed the more it gets used. That's a powerful narrative.
A very powerful investment narrative. But as you alluded to earlier, none of this would matter if the network was still too expensive or too slow to use, which it was years ago.
Ah, the gas wars. I remember those.
Exactly. Yeah. So the third economic pillar here, and maybe the most vital one in 2025, is the layer 2 scaling expansion. This is Ethereum's genius adaptation.
So they solved the high fee problem by shifting most of the everyday traffic to these secondary networks.
Right. Think of Ethereum's main chain, or L1, as the high security vault of a central bank. It's expensive, it's heavily guarded, and it really only handles the final big settlement.
Okay, so then what are the layer twos, like Arbitrum or Base in that analogy?
They're the local bank branches. Or maybe a high-speed transit system. They handle the millions of small daily transactions at near zero cost, and then they batch all of those transactions up and send them back to the main L1 for final security verification.
So you get the best of both worlds. The entire ecosystem can handle millions of transactions cheaply and quickly.
But every single one of those is still ultimately anchored to the superior security of the main Ethereum chain. It's how they're trying to achieve both security and scale.
Pretty smart solution.
It is. It's their primary defense against rivals that just boast raw speed. However, and this is a big however, this is where we have to get critical, because this successful transition also introduces some significant internal economic risks.
So the success itself creates a new liability.
I've got it.
Let's start with the big one then. Revenue fragmentation. This sounds like the main counterpoint to that exciting deflationary idea we just talked about.
It is. It's the great irony of Ethereum's strategy. As those layer 2 networks get cheaper and more efficient, which is the whole pointless gas is spent on the main layer 1 chain.
And if less gas is being spent on L1, then less ETH is being burned.
So value is leaking away. The more successful the L2s are at being cheap, the less revenue flows back to the core L1 token. The whole deflationary story starts to weaken. And we are already seeing this trend in late 2025. The overall burn rate has noticeably slowed down because all the activity is moving to L2s. The big worry is, if all the daily action, all the retail usage happens off-chain, how much economic value does the core ETH token actually capture in the long run?
It still captures the security value.
It captures security value, yes. But does it capture transactional value? That is a very open question.
And while Ethereum is wrestling with this, it has the external threat. Fierce layer 1 competition from blockchains like Solana and Sui.
These rivals are gaining real market share by offering, yes, blazing fast speeds, but also, critically, a much simpler user experience.
That's unified experience.
Exactly. You don't have to navigate bridges or pick between 4 different L2s. Everything just happens on one layer.
And that's a huge threat in consumer-facing areas like gaming or NFTs,
yeah,
where speed and simplicity are everything.
It's a massive threat. If the next big hit game gets built on a simpler platform just because it's easier for users to get started, then Ethereum's dominance could be seriously challenged. It's the classic battle, secure powerhouse versus agile newcomer.
And that's compounded by Ethereum's own internal complexity, what you called roadmap friction.
Right. The upgrades are designed by brilliant people, but the roadmap is, well, it's notoriously complex and it's inherently slow.
We hear these names like Fusaka and Pectra. What are these upgrades actually trying to do?
So they're mainly focused on improving system efficiency and the user experience. Fusaka, for example, is about data availability, making it dramatically cheaper for L2s to post data back to the main chain. Pectra is about enabling something called Virkl trees, which will make it easier for regular people to run a validator.
So they're necessary, but they're so technically difficult that delays are frequent. And those delays give the nimble competitors time to innovate even faster.
Precisely. And for the everyday person, that complexity translates directly into the single biggest barrier for mass adoption, a fragmented user experience.
That's the painful reality, isn't it? Trying to use the Ethereum ecosystem in 2025 can feel like a logistical nightmare. You're constantly having to use different bridges to move assets between networks, juggle different wallets.
It's like trying to run an errand where you need 5 different transit passes to cross 3 different city borders. The security is top-notch, but the user experience is just confusing.
And the mainstream market always, always prefers simplicity.
Always.
Okay, finally, let's circle back to that regulatory footnote on the 4.8% staking yield. ETH itself has a lot of clarity now with the ETFs, but the act of staking is still under scrutiny.
This is a critical nuance. Regulators are still debating whether staking rewards are a security yield or just a payment for a service.
And any change in how those rewards are governed or taxed could really impact the appeal of that 4.8% yield, couldn't it?
It could severely impact it, especially for institutions. If that yield becomes less attractive, it removes one of the main reasons for them to hold and lock up the asset long term.
Which could increase selling pressure.
It could dramatically shift the economics. The whole point is to lock up supply. If that incentive gets eroded by regulation, the entire investment thesis takes a hit.
So when we synthesize this entire deep dive, what's the core duality we're left with?
I think it's this. Ethereum is, without a doubt, the undisputed infrastructure leader. It's validated by giants like JP Morgan and Visa. It's protected by its scaling strategy. It's the established, trustworthy giant.
Yet at the same time, it's struggling with two huge issues. First, internal economic fragmentation, that value leakage problem. And second, a technical complexity that creates a frustrating user experience, which simpler competitors are exploiting.
It's security versus simplicity, institutional trust versus retail accessibility. And the key takeaway for you, the learner, is that the entire investment thesis for Ethereum now hinges on execution. Can the network manage that leakage risk from its own L2s without losing the economic value of the core ETH token?
That is the tightrope they are walking. And that leads us directly to the final provocative thought we want to leave you with. If Layer 2 networks do succeed, and they handle nearly all the daily economic activity, all the fast, cheap stuff, but the security stays anchored to the main Ethereum chain,
then what specific long-term mechanism will ensure that the foundational ETH token continues to capture the value generated by its sprawling ecosystem?
What is the economic feedback loop that keeps the heart of the system viable?
A question that really defines the next decade of decentralized finance.
Indeed. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into Ethereum.